Okay, they've wrapped. Now they're excited here, and they've wrapped up the hoopla in Tampa. So what do we who care about liberty and the dignity of the individual think about what we've heard? Well, the Stossel Show's new special correspondent, Kennedy, who, despite having worked as a VJ on MTV, cares about free markets and free people. He's on the floor of the convention hall. Kennedy, you've been there all week. What'd you like, and what made you sick?
I'll tell you what made me sick first. It is a police state here. I have never seen so much law enforcement. It is so difficult actually getting inside the convention. There are so many branches of law enforcement. There's the Secret Service, there's the sheriff, there's the local police. They want to frisk you, they want to take away your hairspray, they want to take away your rights. Well, and they took away the stick to our great Stossel sign.
Yeah, I heard it was confiscated at the airport. I think it's overkill. Are you saying there's just a lot, or it's just unnecessary and it's more big government?
It's more big government. We're seeing big government all over the place. Today we visited with the caterer. The FDA was in there sticking a thermometer in every piece of steak and every lump of salmon. Big government is everywhere, regardless of what you hear on the stage.
Anything you like?
Yes, I like that once I got inside, I felt like I was a member of the 1%. And I did appreciate the entrepreneurial spirit. I like that they were trumpeting small business, building up small business, because that is the backbone of the economy. However, freedom was a casualty here. Don't listen to anybody else. There was hypocrisy served on both sides, from Republicans and protesters alike.
All right, well, I want to hear more about that later. Kennedy will be back with us later, also with an interview that she did at the convention with Ron Paul. But now, what do others who love free markets and free people think about what we heard this week? We're joined by Mark Meckler, who founded the biggest Tea Party group, Hadley Heath from the Independent Women's Forum. Audience likes it that she founded the Tea Party group, and Nick Gillespie from Reason TV. Yeah, how about a hand for Reason TV? They taught me about liberty, Reason Magazine, so were you inspired, Nick, by anything Mitt Romney said?
Well, I was going to say I was very inspired by the fact that Clint Eastwood, as an 82-year-old, could stay up later than I could. I think I was dozing off partway. I think Mitt Romney gave a very good speech. Unfortunately, I didn't hear the types of specifics that I would have liked to have heard. I wanted to
Why
hear
is it a good speech if there are no specifics?
Because he proved beyond a reasonable doubt that he's actually a human being, which seemed to be in question before the convention. And he had a lot of passion and a lot of vigor in what he was talking about. So that's good. You know, the optics matter. I wanted to hear a line about where he was saying, you know, it is time to cut the size, the scope, and the spending of government. There was nothing, not even, you know, the weakest gesture was we're going to get on track to a balanced budget. Obama had said we're going to cut in 50% the deficit, in my first presidency. He's actually lowering the bar and promising that, you know what, the government is going to stop spending money it doesn't have for things that we don't need. I would have liked to have heard that.
He did not say anything like that.
Absolutely not.
And Hadley, what would you have liked to have heard?
Well, I don't like the idea, the implication that Obama's doing a poor job with the economy, so Romney Ryan is just going to fix the economy. Like, government's going to fix the economy. It's just a new person behind the wheel, and everything will be better. I wanted to hear that we, the American people, entrepreneurs, business people, exchanging voluntarily with each other, creating wealth, we will fix the economy.
Yeah, he sort of implied it. He made fun of that Obama line, "My presidency will stop the rise of the oceans." But I'm going to fix your family? What, I assume he meant maybe he was going to get out of the way so we could have our own families, but it sort of implied that government would solve your family's problems.
Well, you're saying we assume that he's saying he'd get out of the way, but that's actually was the big void in the speech. He didn't say anything about government getting out of the way. I was waiting for the punchline, the big line, right, which is out there. It's historically out there. Government is not the solution to our problems. Government is the problem. That speech was waiting for that line. The American people were waiting for that line.
So why doesn't he give it? It's now a cliche. Reagan said it. Even Bill Clinton sort of said it.
I don't know, and I'm disappointed because it seems like backtracking from something that's been said in the past that's so obvious to the American people, and frankly, on both sides of the aisle.
If I can say, I mean, in the 21st century, we have had a massively swollen government, first under George Bush and then under Obama. Government spending is up about 70% since 2000 in real terms. This is real money. It's doing more than it ever has done before. I mean, we can't go to the airport without getting felt up, by unionized strangers. Nothing, this is a weird century. We need a choice between big government and small government, not big government and slightly bigger government. And it seems to me that Romney, he's promised he's going to take care of our families, he's going to take care of our retirements, he's going to take care of old people and sick people, and he's going to make sure we all get jobs and this and that. There isn't a lot of shrinkage going on there. I want to see the shrinkage, because that's where real entrepreneurial spirit and growth and dynamism comes from, not by promising to be all things to all people. And Romney, I think he did it in a very flattering way, in an upbeat way. He was funny at times, he was touching at times, but it's the same old song, really.
But let me ask about that. I'm new to politics somewhat, in that I never used to watch these conventions, and now I see why. It's all this fluff. My dad gave Mom a rose. We had the gift of unconditional love. My mom and dad were true partners. I found kinship with a circle of friends. I mean, is it unrealistic to expect a plan?
I don't think it is unrealistic. I think the American people, we've talked about, the American people are grown-ups. They need to be treated like grown-ups. They can take the truth. And frankly, none of the politicians are delivering the truth. We saw none of it at the convention.
I'm not a political strategist either, but I noticed in 2008 that one of the things that made candidate Obama so popular was his positive message, hope and change, and his call for unity. And I heard the word united, 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 unity, unity, and it was a generally positive message from Romney tonight, too.
I think, one of the other things to think about is that Romney is not running necessarily on a positive program of, I will do X, Y, and Z. What he needs to do is to showcase two things, and the first is merely to document how bad Obama has been as president. I mean, he inherited a bad situation, and he made everything worse. There is nothing good that you can say that's coming out of the Obama, years. I mean, that's it. Thank you. Total economic collapse.
He ended
bad.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Actually, that's not a bad thing. Yeah. What I'm saying, though, is that Obama has made things worse. What Romney has to say is, look at this guy. We can't be worse than him. And in fact, I've had some successes in my life, and I've been in the private sector, and I've done this, and I've done that, and I've been a governor. The theme was, we can do better. It's like, all he really has to sell is, I'm not going to be as bad.
And he does sell the business executive part pretty well. That one line I liked was, we bet on ourselves. I went to Bain Capital, I started this business. We bet on ourselves and our advice. And then he lists some specifics. Companies he created helped preserve Staples, Sports Authority. That makes it real. I hope people get that.
And it's a fundamental contrast with the existing administration that's, you've got a chief executive who's actually never created anything, certainly never anything in the private sector. So if people are looking for a change now, they're looking for somebody who understands the economy, at least you've got a guy that's been engaged in the economy.
Though he talks about small business all the time, all the Republicans did.
Yeah.
Is there something wrong with big business? Don't they do good things too?
Politicians, I mean, we know this from the Bill Clinton years, they have a lot of fetishes. One of them that is more, they talk about more publicly than others is a small business fetish. Another is, the family farm. You never hear about people talking about family-owned dry cleaner stores, but, family farms, small businesses. Small businesses aren't the backbone of the economy. Most big firms started out as small businesses. The idea is that you want a small business that grows into a big business. All business should be treated equally.
It's true. Sports Authority and Staples, they're big. They're okay.
The bigger they get, the better they get, as long as they're giving customers something they want at a price that everybody's happy
with. And if they don't, they tend to go away.
And
without
a problem in the American tax code and in all kinds of subsidy programs, whether it's the Small Business Administration or whatnot, where small businesses get certain subsidies because they can't compete with the big guys. And then the big guys buy other subsidies, and this is part of the problem. problem. If you're starting to talk about small business versus big business, you're compounding the problem. What we need is a government that is not playing favorites and is not saying, okay, you're a small business, so we're going to give you an extra hug and kiss. We're going to give you more unconditional love from the government than a big business.
Hadley, what's a line you wish you heard from Mitt Romney tonight?
A line I wish I had heard. I think I have to come back to the fact that it is the American people who are drivers of the economy, that it's not going to be, you know, he said several times that we are going to help you. We are going to help you. And I assume that he means he and Paul Ryan. And that's fine, again, if he means help me by deregulating so that I can start my own business, help me by reducing my tax burden or reforming the tax code so that I can navigate it more easily. But don't help me with a handout. I don't think that we need to be talking about government helping people anymore.
The audience applauds that. And I should also say that there are many audience members who liked the speech and were inspired by it and are less cynical, I guess, than I am and most of the panelists. Mark, what line would you have liked to have heard from Mitt Romney?
I wish he would have said that it's his intent to disperse power away from Washington, D.C. and back to the people. He talked about having faith in the people, but he talked about everything I heard was about centralizing decision-making in Washington, D.C. We already have that. That's what both parties do. And if we are going to get a change, it's going to come from the people at the local level in the states. And he didn't talk at all about that.
I really kind of believe that these are small government guys, Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney, but you barely hear it. And without the specifics, I wonder if I should believe it.
Well, you know, I mean, I think Paul Ryan's speech last night, another great performance. And, you know, I do think it matters. People respond to that and they practice these speeches for a reason. It had very good rhetoric about decentralized power, about pushing things away. But then when you look at the substance of his legislative record or of Mitt Romney's, it's not about cutting government. It's not about cutting regulations. It's actually about growing the size and scope of government, of voting for things like the TARP bill, voting for No Child Left Behind,
be specific
voting for
about
Medicare Part D. I mean, these are all in Paul Ryan's past.
The Patriot Act.
Yeah.
But he's changed. He's grown.
Yeah. He's
in
grown
office.
In the 2.5 weeks since he's been announced as vice president.
I want to believe that.
Yeah.
And in terms of the feeling of central planning that I hear, Mitt Romney says, I have a plan to create 12 million jobs. I mean, why not 11 or 15? How does he?
Please don't create jobs. I don't want government creating any more jobs. Government creates jobs that we have to pay for. We pay for government-created jobs. It's fine. You know, I think there are a lot of people who do good work who are government employees, and they do excellent at the jobs that they are assigned. But at the end of the day, you know, every government job takes about 3 or 4 taxpayers to support. So it's a situation where we want to create jobs in the private sector, but Mitt Romney's not doing it unless he's going to start a new company or something.
Well, I mean, my wishful thinking, Gene, says he means we're going to deregulate and that will create the jobs. But we will come back to that. Coming up, to me, the biggest issue facing America is that we're on the road to bankruptcy, therefore on the road to serfdom. Might Republicans take us off that road? There were some positive signs this week, and we'll show you that next. At this week's convention, politicians talked about something that in the past politicians almost always avoided saying.
This explosion of debt is unconscionable and unsustainable.
An American government that continues to borrow money that will mortgage the future.
When they say we have a duty to grow government even when we cannot afford it, does it sound like compassion to you? Or does it sound like recklessness?
We have no other option but to make the hard choices, cut federal spending, and fundamentally reduce the size of this government.
Boy, they sound serious, but politicians have always promised cuts and then spent more. So, Mark, this year, did you hear something more convincing?
You know, I hear it from a wider chorus of people, so I like that. But I actually thought it was missing from Romney's speech, so that concerns me. The guy at the top really didn't talk about cutting the size and scope of government.
Well, he did say, we will cut the deficit and put America on track to a balanced budget, which is pretty weak beer,
to say
the least. You know, and Paul Ryan's budget, which the Republican House passed earlier this year, if everything breaks the right way, the budget will be balanced in 2040. We don't have until 2040 to get this under control.
But we don't have to balance it. We just have to slow the growth so the economy can grow faster.
One would hope. I mean, the Republican budget that that was voted on would mean we would go from spending about $3.8 trillion this year to spending $4.9 trillion in 10 years. That's not cutting anything. And it's certainly not going to, we can't cut them slack on that. That's just, it's out of control.
And under two trillion, just under Clinton.
That's right.
Chaos.
Yeah. So again, it's not even like we're talking about these are people who are talking about topping off a gigantic spending binge that's been going on for 12 years, basically, and they still can't bring it in their minds to just say, you know what, we spent $3.8 trillion this year, we're spending $3.7 trillion next year, and we got to get used to it because we blew it all on hookers and cocaine, and now the bill has come due, and we're not going to be able to squeeze more blood out of a stone.
Romney's talking about bringing the government down to 20% of the economy, but it was lower under Bill Clinton.
That's right. His last year was about 18%. Sadly, Romney wants to bring it to 20% of spending of GDP. But his own budget projections
specifics.
Yeah, of course. And he'll bring it down to 20, but he wants to increase defense spending. He wants to increase Medicare spending. He wants to make sure Social Security stays the same. But he also says, I mean, their budget is they're going to raise 18% of GDP in revenue. So for as long as that's in place, each year we'll have a 2% gap of more deficit.
And you mentioned defense spending. There's this hysteria over the horrible Obama cuts and the sequestration cut. Well, here's this graph that shows the current plan of spending and the automatic cuts that would happen if this sequestration happens. It's not a catastrophe. It's not drastic cuts.
No, and it brings it down to, for 1 year, back to 2007 levels.
And more than we spent during Vietnam and the Cold War, adjusted for inflation, and yet the Republicans seem united that we got to spend more on defense.
Everybody's beholden to somebody in Washington, D.C. So you have a huge defense lobby, and they spend millions of dollars making sure that these guys don't want to cut defense.
So you're saying they're all prostitutes, that they don't believe it?
Well, I didn't use that word, but.
You're saying that they're just bought off by defense contractors? I think they really believe it, that we can bomb Iran and that'll work well.
I mean, the bottom line is for whatever the program is, whether you're talking a welfare program or defense, Americans, from a common sense perspective, understand you can't spend money that you don't have. And they figured out, because the game's up now, that you can't just keep printing money to pay for these things.
You know, the United States is already spending about half of all military spending around the globe. It's like 45%. We can reduce that and increase our safety because, the past decade of reckless and very expensive wars that we were constantly being told, it's only going to take a long weekend, it's not going to cost very much money. That was all lies. And, Rand Paul was the one politician of either party, and at the Republican convention, of all places, he said, Republicans have to understand that every dollar that is spent on defense is not necessary or spent well. That's a message that has to sink into both parties, because the Democrats are, big spenders on defense, too. This, when they're talking about, Romney's talking about Truman and Reagan, these are Cold War presidents. Cold War is over. Islamic threats are not existential.
Maybe we're naive. You're libertarians. You want to cut all this stuff. These guys are professional politicians. They know what works. They're not saying this. Maybe if you say this, you lose.
I think it's, we can safely say we can bring the boys home from Germany. World War II is over.
I hope so. Yes, coming up, we go back to the convention where our special correspondent, Kennedy, has an interview with Ron Paul. For the past week, Kennedy has been our correspondent at the Republican convention. I asked her to try to cover what the mainstream media doesn't. So she first checked out the anti-capitalist protesters' complaints about corporate rule.
Corporate rule has got to go! The party saved gold! Corporate rule has got to go!
In these complaints about Wall Street, Kennedy saw hypocrisy.
They all use Macs. They all fly United. They all pump their cars, fill a Chevron gas.
Say no to the corporations. I mean, me personally, I'm really worried about the environment.
What kind of computer do you use?
I use a 5-year-old Mac. And
I that's a corporation?
I know. I see, the thing is
there a non-corporate computer? Because I haven't seen one yet.
I don't think so.
So, Kennedy, did they make any sense?
They make sense to themselves. The anarchists, you think these are going to be the freedom lovers? They want their own set of laws. They really don't love freedom across the board. No one does. They're a little hypocritical.
I hear there are people who call themselves anarchists there, and they're calling for more regulation?
They are. They want regulation on corporation. They want their own form of government smothering. Even though they say they're anarchists and they wear the pretty masks, it's hypocrisy across the board.
All right. Well, there weren't that many of them. So let's move on, because Kennedy also covered the convention with Ron Paul's success in mind. Republicans kept talking about freedom and opportunity.
You're the party of opportunity unless you're gay.
We can agree to disagree on certain issues, but at the end of the day, we have the right message and the right team to win.
On Tuesday, Ron Paul delegates tried to at least nominate the candidate they had pledged to represent.
Ron Paul! Ron Paul!
But the Republican rule said to do that, you need delegate signatures from 5 states. Paul got petitions from Nevada, Minnesota, Maine, Iowa, Alaska, but the party then changed the rules on the spot. They said delegates need petitions from 8 states.
In other words, it's like changing the goalposts in the middle of a game.
So Ron Paul made a brief appearance on the convention floor, but nothing official. Kennedy caught up with him right before he left.
Dr. Paul, congratulations on your campaign and igniting your supporters' passion. We have seen those delegates. They have clung so hard to their beliefs. They're really fighting down there. What did you say to them when you went on the floor?
Well, it was mostly pretty much social encouragement. Thank you. I love your enthusiasm. Do your best and that sort of thing. Nothing, no particulars.
They're fighting for the soul of the party. They want to keep your message alive. How do they do that?
Everybody has to do what they think they're best at.
Yeah.
Some people may run, some people might support other candidates, but everybody has to study. And that's what amazes me. They usually go and study, and they start and they read economics,
yeah.
And they change their careers and all. So I'm utterly amazed about what they do.
One thing they did was have another big, passionate rally. Thousands of people showed up. Few politicians get anywhere near this crowd. Even Ron Paul isn't certain why so many come.
I can't claim anything special. All I can claim is a sincere interest and determination and conviction that the spirit of liberty, the principles of liberty, and all that we talk about, they're correct. And I always say I recognize my shortcomings, and I don't pretend that, you know, I'm the greatest speaker or anything else, but I am convinced that if we pursue and follow up and advance the cause of liberty that was given us in our early history, we don't have to go back to the dark ages of authoritarianism. We are the future.
Yeah.
We aren't the past. We are the future. And that's what a lot of people...
Speaking of that rally...
talk about young people. They are the future.
Gary Johnson would like to accept the baton from you. Is it yours to pass, and are you willing to do that?
No, I don't have any power to pass anything.
Yeah.
You know...
Do you support him?
I think he's wonderful, and I think he's doing a good job, and people should look at him, and every individual should make up their own mind.
Okay, yeah, he wouldn't come out, really, and endorse Gary Johnson. Gary Johnson, for those of you who don't know, is the Libertarian Party, the head of the Libertarian Party ticket. Ron Paul has run as a Libertarian. Kennedy, what do you think?
I think that he stopped shy of an endorsement, but I think you're going to see a lot of Paulites who have been disenfranchised at this convention by the Republican establishment. They're going to take a good hard look at Gary Johnson and the Libertarian Party. The Paulites held a press conference today outside, and not just them, the Tea Party movement and other grassroots movements like Rick Santorum, who have been squashed with these rule changes, and they're not happy about it.
All right, well, I have a point of view, and I'm okay with Santorum being squashed, but I didn't like Ron Paul being squashed, and his delegates there, was their acceptance? This is just part of the game? Maybe Ron Paul's son, Rand, will carry on the banner, or are people, were they upset?
Here, the delegates have worked so hard, they were upset, and tried to get him to speak on stage. They did whatever they could to get him in nomination. it didn't work, and they were turned away. Will they turn to Rand Paul? Will they turn to Gary Johnson? Time will tell, and it's up to the individual. That's what Ron Paul wanted to get across to his supporters.
They played a tape of Ron Paul, and afterward, a lot of the Paul delegates just walked out protesting.
Yeah.
Did the convention notice that, or was it a big thing, small thing?
No, they did notice that. There is discord within the Republican Party. They're trying to make it seem like this is a completely united party, and it's just simply not. And we have seen the fissures exposed this week. And if Mitt Romney loses, the party will dissolve a little bit and will have to reinvent itself.
Well, I'm impressed that you can walk and talk among all those people in balloons.
With
thank
these
you.
Balloons? Woo.
Thank you, Kennedy. When we return, we'll talk about the Republicans' war on women. What's that? Welcome back to our post-Republican convention coverage. What do people who care about free markets and free people think of what we've heard? We have our all-star panel again, Mark Meckler, who founded the biggest Tea Party group, Hadley Heath from the Independent Women's Forum, and Nick Gillespie from Reason TV. So, Hadley, it was Dodge tonight. I've been hearing about the war on women.
It wasn't exactly dodged, right? Romney did say some things about women. I'm not sure he responded the best way possible.
He pandered horribly.
He pandered.
As governor, I chose a woman lieutenant governor. Half my cabinet and senior officials were women. It's just awful pandering.
Right, he's sort of buying into this idea that if he has an equal number of women on his cabinet as men, that that equal outcome measurement somehow means that he doesn't hate women or that he loves women, but it's an outcomes-based measurement, and that's problematic. He's having this argument on the terrain that the left has designed, that we have to measure things based on outcomes instead of opportunities.
And by outcomes, you mean what?
Well, parity is not equality. So we see laws like Title IX that try to, you know,
just as many women must participate in sports.
Right, and we see, you know, attempts to equalize men's and women's wages, which aren't productive laws either, because at the end of the day, the differences between men and women's earnings are largely a result of women's choices and men's choices, not broad discrimination.
And you represent, you work for the Independent Women's Forum, which I'm glad exists, because for a while all the women's groups were big government groups. And what's your response to this? The Democrats say the Republicans are waging a war on women because they want to restrict abortion.
Right. Democrats are making huge mistakes when it comes to women. Two things. First of all, they're making the assumption, they're working off the assumption that all women are the same, that women are a voting bloc. But that's not true. Women are 52% of the electorate, very diverse, rural, urban, single, married, young, old, have a lot of different interests. And secondly, they are narrowing the term women's rights, as they have done for years and years and years, to one issue, and that issue is abortion. When women are...
contraception.
Right, and women are interested in so much more. We don't sit around all day and think about abortion, abortion,
but
abortion.
Some
we
women
think about
can't
the economy.
Afford their birth control pills, and government has to provide that.
Well, if that's the argument, that it's tough to afford and that it gives women greater control or independence over their lives, then I'm waiting for the government to give me a free car. Because that, you know, if a woman has a car, she can get back and forth to her job, she can have a lot more independence and control over her lives. Those are expensive. I mean, the argument doesn't stand. Women, you know, how insulting. In fact, it's very insulting. Did you see the Julia campaign? I mean, that was insulting. To sit back on my computer, click through the infographic that government...
This is an Obama infomercial about Julia gets
campaign.
Her life
right,
through government.
That at every stage of my life, I have to say thank you, Uncle Sam. Thank you, government, because I'm a poor, helpless woman, and I need Uncle Sam to step in for me. I mean, that's paternalistic, that's anti-feminist, and that's insulting to me as a woman.
And, Mark, you love this war on women. Why?
You know, this is the theme from the left that's been running for years. Republicans or conservatives have a war on women, a war on minorities, a war on handicapped people, a war on children. We've even recently seen the war on old people, right, with pushing granny over the cliff. These are just simple fear tactics, and it really has nothing to do with the real, honest-to-God problems that are facing the country today.
Well, you know, to put one of the reasons why this stuff was in there, I'll give you it's a two-word answer, Todd Akin. Okay, you know, the Republican Party does not do well with women, and unless women are totally fooled by the Democrats, maybe it's worth thinking about why. There is a widespread perception that Republicans want to restrict abortion rights. So if you care about that and certain forms of contraception and whatnot. So I'm not saying that the Democrats have better answers. I think, you know, freedom is the answer here, and let people figure out how they want to live and give them the widest latitude possible. But the fact of the matter is that you hear a lot of Republicans saying we want to restrict or get rid of abortion completely. I mean, that's part of the sanctity of life argument that they're talking about.
Our live studio audience watched much of the convention and all of Mitt Romney's speech tonight. So what do they think? And what do you at home think? That's next. Now, audience participation. We're here again with Mark Meckler, who founded the biggest Tea Party group. Hadley Heath from the Independent Women's Forum and Nick Gillespie from Reason TV. First, from my Facebook page, Donna Pignon writes, I hate that it's like a scripted pep rally. The minority voice is ignored. Silence, no debate. Me too. I mean, isn't that what a convention, you're supposed to have arguments about ideas?
I mean, really, the convention is an infomercial. It's meant to be a pitch. The debate comes when we have the debate.
$18 million taxpayer money that they voted that we have to pay for this.
That's outrageous, and we just shouldn't do that, especially in these times.
All right, let me go to the audience here. Yes, sir.
I hear a lot of rhetoric from the Republicans about how they were reaped the benefits of immigration and how their parents came in, and now that they were given this opportunity because of being immigrants in the U.S., why don't I hear them saying anything about opening up the borders for immigration?
I think that's a great point, and this is the thing that's so frustrating about the Republicans. Their rhetoric is sharp, but the reality of their policies are terrible. Obama is the worst immigration president in memory. He deported in 3 years. He deported more people, or almost as many people, as George Bush did in 8 years. And Mitt Romney is losing.
But now he has this amnesty program.
It's temporary, short-lived, and it affects very few people. It's a total symbolic gesture when he realized he was losing the Hispanic vote, which he took for granted. Mitt Romney is going to lose the Hispanic vote to a guy who deports Mexicans, you know, like some kind of like horrible Spanish conquistador. This is, you know, it's really disturbing. The Republicans do not understand where their rhetoric comes from or what it means. They should be opening the border and saying, anybody who wants to work here, you're an American wherever you're living, come live here now.
On Facebook, Matt Allen says, it's just more pandering, more saying what most people want to hear. I'll fix your problems if you elect me. Why can't we get someone that'll stand up and say, I'll restore liberty, but it's your job to fix your problems?
Well, a lot of people have already decided who they're going to vote for, right? There's every election cycle, there's about 40% of people who are going to vote for the left, 40 on the right, and there's this juicy 20% in the middle that everybody's after. But I'm curious, who among those swing voters watches the conventions?
Well,
who
reads
the platforms? Who, you know, I think that they'll probably tune in for the debates, but I do think this is sort of preaching to the choir, time to rally the base. I understand it's, you know, it's kind of a big circus.
But wouldn't it be a shock and a good thing to say, no, you individuals, free people, solve your problem?
I mean, that's what I was looking for, certainly. And there are politicians who are saying things like that. We saw some of that in the lead up to Romney's speech. Unfortunately, not in his speech. There are politicians like Scott Walker who are saying what they're going to do, and then they actually do what they say. We just need a lot more of that.
Yes, ma'am.
I've heard a lot about achieving energy independence and promoting free trade. Aren't these contradictory goals?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the phrase energy independence. It seems crazy to me. We're an interconnected world. It's a global world. We really don't want to be energy independent. You know, the idea is we have...
Well, why not?
Well, because we are an interconnected economy worldwide. I mean, we don't want to cut off those nasty Canadians. That's not what this is about, right? We want to be trading.
Or Mexico.
Right? We want to be trading with other nations. It's a very good thing. It lowers prices. It increases standard of living worldwide. It spreads freedom and liberty. So we want to trade with the world.
But Romney talked about, I'm going to give you energy independence to create jobs.
The right word is abundance. We've got a lot of energy in this country, and I think what he should be talking about is tapping all of our resources. That's the real deal.
Also from Facebook, Lindsay Brewer says, as a libertarian, I'm not a fool. I got to go with the lesser of two evils, and Romney is it.
He's the lesser of two evils. Well,
yeah. On the other hand, she says, maybe if Obama gets elected, our party will be nominated next time.
As a libertarian, I'm a small L libertarian, I don't belong to a party. I get a lot of heat from my Republican and Democratic friends who say, like, how can you not vote for one of the people who's supposed to win? And, you know, I'm not the problem. I've laid out at Reason.com today, I laid out exactly what Romney and the Republicans can do to win my vote. They can cut spending, they can cut the military actions, and they can stop, you know, trying to tell me how to live my life in my own bedroom. You know, they say they want to be out of the boardroom, they got to get out of the bedroom, too. But, you know, they have to come to us. I mean, you were talking about independent swing voters. They've alienated these people, both parties. You know, what most people want is to be left alone and to be given a stable framework of laws that they can predictably rely on to dispense small amounts of justice.
And you've written about this, that more Americans are saying, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat.
It's about 3 million people since 2008 have disaffiliated with the Republicans and Democrats, and they're not necessarily
libertarian.
No, they're not. They're not. But I mean, but they're definitely not Democrats and Republicans anymore, because, you know, they have seen, you know, the petty differences between these two, and you know, they've decided they need something new. That's the future.
Thank you, all of you, panel.
Thank you,
Nick, Hadley, Mark.